I'm Owen.
And I'm Chris.
And this is the Dead Wargamer Society.
Cool. So today we do have a special guest. We have Andrew from Gunmeister Games. Gunmeister Games is most well known for creating the game Judgment, which we've talked about on the podcast before. We've talked about the original version in a few episodes, and we've also talked about the recent Creature Caster Kickstarter for Judgment Eternal Champions, as well as talked about some possible demos for people coming out to Captain Con with that. Andrew's coming to us from Australia, so welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here. It is sunny Australia. We're in our summer at the moment, so it's beautiful weather. Nice.
Yeah, you're also calling us from the future because it's Wednesday out there.
That is true. Yeah, it's 11 a.m. Wednesday. So correct.
So, it's a pleasure to have you on. I'm really excited for this episode. Judgment's definitely been a major game for me for the past couple of years. Even pre-pandemic was something that I really enjoyed with the original version and something that I've been enjoying toying with it with the new version, and very excited to get more models into my hands.
Awesome. I mean, I'm looking forward to chatting about it. One of my favorite subjects. And yeah, I know you've been playing for a long time. We've talked about Judgment for a long time, so it'd be good to catch up on that as well.
Awesome. So normally we kick things off with just a real quick overview of what we've been, working on our painting tables. Andrew, have you been painting or working on anything recently?
Yeah. So I haven't painted for a while, but I've been setting up all the studio because the Judgment boxes, like the Kickstarter, I'm distributing all the Australia Pacific Kickstarter pledges. And so I've got the new starter box. So I've been setting all thing up in the studio, and I'm about to start painting the PVC. Out of the PVC models out of the starter box. That's what I'm doing at the moment. It's quite cool.
Awesome. I know you might have something of a biased opinion here, but how do you like the PVC? I know the resin is fantastic. Chris has shown me that. How's the PVC looking?
It's really good. Like I've got to say, like we started doing some PVC models towards the end of V1 when we were just still Gunmeister Games on our own. But I mean, the starter box has got 10 heroes and 2 monsters in it, and opening them up, they're all assembled. You pop them out. They're ready to go. The quality is really good. Like for tabletop standard, if you want to go on a competition, obviously the resins that go. But for people who are, middle of the road painters, good tabletop standard, and love playing games, the PVC is amazing. The quality's improved so much in recent years.
That's awesome to hear. I really look forward to checking that out once it hits the store shelves here in the U.S. Chris, speaking of painting Judgment models, what have you been up to recently?
So I'm waiting for a box to come in from Canada for Judgment, actually. I do have some models painted up for it to take to Captain Con to do demos, but I'm also waiting on a starter box. At this point, I realize that I didn't ask if it's the resin or the PVC coming in. I'm pretty sure it's the resin, though. The resin has been a ton of fun to paint. So far, I've painted up 8 of the models, and it's just been a pleasure. They have like really good textures and details to it, and the flash is still really not an issue, even with the shrinking to a smaller scale, which has been great. I also have been painting up some Middle Earth strategy battle game, maybe? Some dwarves, because someone wanted to play up at Captain Con, so I wanted to knock those out. What about you, Owen?
I've been painting up some Eden models for Captain Con, some Eden terrain, or terrain to be used with Eden for Captain Con. And then it's just Battletech all the little long day. I've got a pretty good-sized backlog there, so looking to get through that, and then on to whatever I find interesting this year. Judgment's definitely on the list of games I'm excited to check out. Hope to get one of those demos in at Captain Con, and if it's as good as everyone keeps telling me it is, I'll probably be picking up at least 10 heroes and 2 monsters in the short term after that. So speaking of Judgment, let's get into it. So today we're talking about Judgment. I'm going to call it version 1, the initial release of Judgment. I know that's one of Chris's favorite games. I know he's also really excited for the new version of Judgment, the Judgment Eternal Champions release. But we wanted to talk about the older game. And I'd say we're not normally the type to do discussions of different editions, but the differences between the initial release and the current release were pretty large. We'll get into the specifics a little bit later, but I won't say this is quite as drastic as, say, the difference between Warhammer Fantasy Battles and Age of Sigmar, but I would say it's probably on that order of magnitude relative to other edition changes. Andrew, do you think that's a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, I do, absolutely. In our minds, it was like a hard reset. We carried over a lot of the mechanics and the idea of the game. So, but in terms of the scale change and the move to hexes, they're pretty big changes, I think, for the game. So, yeah, I think that's an apt description.
Glad I'm totally not totally off base here. I usually start these off with a quick wiki-style summary, so people that haven't heard of Judgment before have some idea what the heck we're talking about. So Judgment is a MOBA-inspired miniatures game designed by Andrew and Jeff Galea and the team at Gunmeister Games. The game was first released via Kickstarter and initially funded in 2017. It's notable for having just gorgeous, gorgeous miniatures. They were 54mm scale, really just absolute showpieces that you could actually play a game with, which is was definitely quite the perk. It also had some really deep gameplay. Chris got me to check it out. I downloaded the app and, to be frank, was a little bit overwhelmed relative to other games. What made this possible, though, was it was played using usually 3 or 5 54mm minis per side. It was played on a 2 or 3 foot circular diameter play area, and it used a custom type of D6 dice to resolve different actions of the table. So that's kind of an academic overview. In terms of like the background, the world of Judgment, since we have the expert here, Andrew, do you want to give us some background on what Judgment the game is all about?
Yeah, for sure. I've played tabletop games for many years, like my whole life. The big ones being Warhammer Fantasy Battles and then War Machine and Hordes for a long time. I think I was also a very keen computer gamer, so I played a lot of, you know, Warcraft 3, Warcraft 2, and then onto MOBAs. So I think at the time I started delving with thinking about trying to do a tabletop adaption of that, and that's how it kind of started. There's a lot of things in the game that are really, it really is MOBA inspired, right? So, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to take the best things from MOBAs and then try to work out what would work on a tabletop, what wouldn't. And that took a lot of time to work out, you know, what does come across well and what doesn't. And also the 54mm scale, you know, that was a big decision at the time. But I'm a lover of miniatures, a lover of big miniatures. Even when I played, you know, Warhammer, I'd play ogres or, you know, I'd play big models. I really liked them. And Troll Bloods in War Machine. So I think for me it was kind of that big miniatures always appealed to me. And the only Games Workshop brought out the game's going to slip my mind now, a 54mm kind of like scenario game.
Inquisitor,
that's right. And that was the very first time I kind of got used to it. I remember that I saw it in White Dwarf, there was an article where they used a Warhammer Fantasy Giant in Inquisitor as a big model. And I was like, this is mad. So when it came to doing it, because it was a low model count, we went with that. That was in the end of the day, it was a decision that was more to satisfy my want than being a good business decision, you know, because they were more expensive to make, more expensive to produce, made the game more expensive, you know, they were harder to transport, but I just wanted to do it. I loved it, you know, for me, it was something that we wanted to do. And the models, you know, from the start, because they were 54mm, low model count, we treated every single one of them as you would an absolute hero in one of the other games, you know, like one of the superstars of War Machine or Warhammer. So that's how we went to it, and that's how it went out.
Awesome. Just for people that are unfamiliar, in terms of like the background fiction of Judgment, what's the Judgment world about?
Yeah, cool. So there's a kind of thing where when you're playing a mobile game, like Judgment had this. So the heroes die, they respawn, you know, things like that, and you gain levels during the game and all this kind of stuff. So I wanted to have a really good way to describe how that could be possible, right? How can you have mirror matchups and things like that? So I'm a big D&D player over the years, and the shadow plane and whole, you know, the ethereal plane and traveling to other planes. So the way that we described it was there is a physical world called Athene where all the heroes live, and there's these old gods, and there's a shadow plane in between where the old gods' planes are, which was the elemental planes and the prime material plane. So essentially what you do is, as a hero would become summoned they would, their projection, their body, the physical body on Athene would go into a coma sort of, you know, state, and then they would go be projected onto the shadow plane where they'd actually fight. So judgment is actually fought on the shadow plane. And you are essentially representing the demigods on the shadow plane, the two players, and you're fighting. So when a hero dies, inverted commas, on the shadow plane, it basically breaks their ethereal cord from their physical body, but then they take some time to reform again at the effigy. And that's how we explain that. And because on the shadow plane, time is different to the way it is on the physical world, you can have the same hero projected from different times on the physical world onto the same time onto the shadow plane. So that's how we kind of did that. It's always, you do the fiction to match what the game does. But for example, League of Legends has a really, really poor backstory of why they're fighting. It's like some arena where heroes go for glory, and it's just trash, right? Like I was, you know, I don't mean to be rude to the League of Legends. I love the game. And when the League of Legends series came up on Netflix, that was interesting because that was actually showing the heroes in the real world, and there's nothing to do with the game. So they didn't even try to explain it. So I want to do a bit better than that. That's how we kind of did it. That's the Judgment universe.
So I know Chris probably has some strong opinions here. In terms of mechanical highlights of the game, what would you say was unique and really interesting about Judgment?
Okay, there's a few things. We had the special dice. Now, why did we do that? I've got a mathematics background, so I got a mathematics degree from years ago. So I was working out all the probabilities of doing things, and then it became a lot very complicated rolling D6s and trying to work out what you could and couldn't do. So I did probability tables, how I wanted things to work, and then converted that into symbols on dice, which roughly equated to when you roll the dice, it's the same probability. The other thing that we did was there's a lot of games where you can just get hordes of dice, and sometimes you can get spikes where it's really hard to explain. Like in kind of War Machine, if a, you know, someone charges a jack and you just spike your dice and you get all these extra dice, your weapon master, whatever, you can one hundred to zero a jack in one hit. And it doesn't really make a lot of sense. So what we did was we capped the dice. I mean, how many dice you throw, and it's all about generating dice, you have to pick your best three to do things. And that tactical element on the fly while you're fighting, throwing your dice, what's the best three dice? You know, do I want to do it a combat maneuver? Do I want to maximize my damage? Do I want to do both? And that kind of constantly trying to evaluate what's the best thing to do when you throw dice is a really good part of the game, fairly unique part of it. And the idea that you can, hitting someone's not all about damage, you know, the whole maneuvering the models around the board using the special symbols on the dice to do combat maneuvers is a really good part. You've got a constantly evolving dynamic board that keeps you engaged while you're playing, because you're always trying to outthink, and the chessboard's moving all the time. And say you've got alternating activations, so really you're constantly involved, and you're not just sitting there watching your opponent for a long time. You're constantly involved, and before you activate your model, the board will change, and then you. So it's really, you know, that we want to have a vision of your plan of what you want to do, but you have to be very adaptable when you're playing Judgment, and that's a kind of, I think, a very unique thing as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few other like major highlights that existed for it. I think Judgment was definitely one of the first really MOBA-inspired games, which had a lot of different MOBA flavors to it, including multiple win conditions, but all centered around destroying an effigy, but different ways to do it. Pick and ban phase for heroes in a lot of the different game formats. The fact that there was an AI-controlled monster, and that it's not just one monster, but you had several choices that would end up on the board. There was a lot going on, and what I liked a lot about it is that there was a lot of deep gameplay to it, because it was very easy to run someone through a demo. The basic rules for the game were a small pamphlet. Like, it wasn't even like a deep rule book, you know, it was none of this like, I need 154 pages. I think like the basic rule book was probably under 20 pages and small pages. And really, the complexity came from the strategies that you could take within the game and the characters themselves that you were playing with, because the characters did very radically different things, but were still balanced well. For the longest time, as I was talking to people about Judgment and getting people into Judgment, we talked a lot about how well balanced the game was, especially in the time frame that it was out. Outside of like chess and checkers, it might be the most balanced war game that was out at that point in time. Even though which is saying a lot for a game where every single character is equal to another character, the amount of thought that went into, what stats and abilities are going to be equal to this other character's, even though they're completely different. Like, how are we going to balance a soul gazer character whose primary purpose here is to collect souls and disrupt your opponent compared to a gigantic minotaur that's just going to brawl into people like the Hulk?
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things. It's really good points you made that we took from the MOBA that made that possible. Like, we don't have factions, right? So, and that was a big decision point as well, because people are used to factions. They get associated with it. They fall in love with their faction, and so breaking that mold or that mindset was a challenge initially for players. But the fact that you can just take any heroes you want, like if a heroes happens to be, I'm not saying right now every hero is equally perfectly equal, but the fact that they're available to both players means it's balanced by definition, right? Because you can both take the same things and play each other. In terms of the individual heroes, the two ways to win the game, there's one way to win the game is destroying the effigy, but the two ways to go about it, like killing heroes to try to take their souls or picking souls off the board, and also direct damage to the effigy. So there's a multiple ways you could do it. So that was important, and in also balancing heroes, as you said, because heroes that are very good at picking up souls off the ground, that's just as valuable as destroying an enemy hero, right, in the game. So it actually worked really well. And once again, just my mathematical, put that lens on there. I don't want to get too technical, analytical, because the game is quite not, it doesn't feel that way when you're playing it. It feels very organic. But in the background, we have fixed damage grids, right? So you have the concept of doing a glance, solid or critical hit. And that's 2, 3, 4 for most heroes, and or 2, 3, 5 for some of the bigger ones. So kind of that also lets us, it balances the way that we design heroes, because we've got a good template that heroes have to fit into. And then beyond that, you've got a lot of scope to introduce spells and things like that. But people ask me how can you create a game that's so depth and complex? But it doesn't happen overnight, right? There's a lot of iteration. I've been working on the game for almost 8 years, and that's and that old adage where most overnight successes are 10 years old, right? People see that, so I think, yeah, it takes a long time to get to that point, but we've got a very good framework now to introduce heroes and not break the game.
No, it sounds like a really smart way to go about doing it, having those discrete damage levels, so it's not down to dice variance that's deciding the game. Sounds like a great idea if you're trying to make this a game about player skill and not about, let's just show up to the table and throw a bucket of D6s and, oh, look, Yahtzee, I win.
Yeah, and that was one of the big things as well. Like, we want to, the beauty of tabletop games and why people play them is that variable element is important, right? You need to have some, variables. So it's not just like playing chess and the best player is going to win every single time. But you don't want the variables to be too much. And I'm not going to criticize other games, because people play games for different reasons. Some people love, Blood Bowl's a big one. I love Blood Bowl, but Blood Bowl's very dicey, right? To detract from the fact it's an amazing game, right?
Yeah.
So, but then with Judgment, it's what we've always tried to get it to a point where the dice do matter, but in our way, generating the number of dice takes a lot of skill to do that. And even when you throw 10 dice, you just have to pick your best three. Like, it can't just spike for you. So it's actually quite a, it's, I think we've got a good balance of Judgment. It's a very good, strong competitive game that stands up to any competitive play, particularly in V2. We'll get to that later. But it also is a lot of fun to play for new players.
Awesome. So I'm a little bit of a MOBA dork, and but I also play a lot of tabletop games. So when you say that monsters are available, is that something like a scenario in most tabletop games, or is that more like a Roshan or Baron Nashor from a MOBA?
Yeah, it's a bit like the Baron Nashor. Like, it's kind of, they spawn in locations on the map. So depending on what map you're playing, it dictates what monsters spawn. And the monsters have different power levels as well. So they're like neutral, they're enemies to both players. We have a built-in AI into the game, so the monsters behave a certain way automatically depending on what the players do or what state of the game you're in. And then when you kill them, like you do in a MOBA, you get experience points, so you get levels effectively, and you also, they drop loot. So they effectively drop what's called fate, which is the currency of the game, and you can buy magical items like you can from a shop. So that's basically how the monsters work. And they're a very, very important part of the game. And they're another thing that's unique that add a really good fun element to the game, because monster manipulation is also a legitimate strategy. Like, there's heroes that can either, they're monster hunters where they can hunt them and get a lot of loot and fuel your warband, or you can manipulate them to move them around and push them into your enemy because they'll hit anyone they happen to get in contact with. So you can, there's heroes that can manipulate their AI of a monster to make them be a problem for your opponent. It's a really fun part of the game as well.
That's awesome. So we've talked a little bit about the depth of the gameplay, kind of the soul of the game. Just from like an emotional standpoint, though, I know Chris here is a gigantic fan of the game. Chris, is there anything we missed in terms of why this is one of your favorite games?
I think we hit a number of the things that I really enjoyed about it. It's an interesting, I mean, like, getting into the game, essentially, you know, for the people who don't actually know, was that I was introduced to Judgment by working with Muse on Minis. There was a couple of Adepticons in a row where we were selling Judgment models. And the first year I think we did it, I was like, yeah, you know, these models are really cool. I didn't really know a lot about the game, but, like, the models are so amazing. Like, I picked out, like, two or three. I'm like, if there's any left, this is what I'm going to take home. We sold out of almost everything.
That was a big Adepticon, that one. It was fun, yeah.
Yeah, we sold almost everything, so I got one model. I got Thorgar, which is a really cool Minotaur. I was like, this is cool. And I took it home. You know, I painted it up. I entered in a few competitions. I think it won Captain Con 1 year, which was really cool. And the next year I went back. I was like, oh, maybe I'll check this out and check out the actual game behind it. So this year we had like a little bit more. And I caught a demo and I was like, oh, man, like this game is so much better than I thought it would be. Because I thought it was one of those like, oh, the models are super awesome, and hey, if there's a game I can play, that's cool too. But even though the models are amazing, the rules of the game were so good that the gameplay itself outshone how good the models were for me. And I dove pretty deep into it. I think a lot of those things that were mentioned were big things. You know, the gorgeous models, the balance in the gameplay, especially between anything you could put on the table. You know, I would bring, you know, 8-10 models out with me to conventions to play in 3 model games and just rotate what I had going in. And like at no point in time was I like, this is my squad. Like, nobody, you know, like I'm not gonna, there's no reason for me to play anything else. Like if I, you know, went into a match without Allendeer, you know, who granted was one of my favorite characters play-wise, I still felt good. Like, you know, the game was still balanced to the point where I could win. It wasn't necessarily the strategy I'd want to take, but it wasn't like I was taking a hit balance-wise or like I was bringing a less effective force.
While you're talking just then, the other thing that, we, you know, games have scenarios, and we do have scenarios, but we also have fixed map terrain. So the maps themselves are also balanced. You know, we have a set of maps that are available for tournament use, and they're balanced towards different heroes and different play styles as well. So across the course of the tournament, play 3 or 4 or 5 games, whatever, the maps are so different that the warband you put together needs to be able to adapt to that as well.
That was a really good point. I think the other thing too is some of the criticism that I think early on that I heard, especially while selling stuff, was, oh man, the game's so expensive, because a lot of the models, especially for a couple of years there, were, you know, around that $50 to $55 mark for a model. And, you know, if you wanted all the mats, like a lot of people did, to play all the scenarios, it could rank up there pretty quick. Even if, though, you were buying them individually, they were really competitive for where, like, neoprene mats typically were. And I think it was more about the gameplay than anything else, because legitimately, you could get in and play real easy for under $250. That's not bad. I mean, especially considering it to comparing it to like a lot of the other things at that point. Like, what are you paying to get into War Machine at that point? You know, what are you paying to get into 40K? It was a lot cheaper. And I think what was more daunting is that when people would get the demo game and they'd see how all the characters played, they didn't see it as I can pick my 5 favorite. They saw it as I need to buy all 27. You know, like I need to own everything to play this game because everything is so cool and I want to try all the characters. And I think that's like saying a lot about the game, because even though there might have been some like fan favorites, even looking at the last tournament that was over at Warfare Weekend, where you had one of the larger turnouts for people. And it was right before COVID struck. There was a very wide variety of what was played. You know, there really wasn't a lot of duplication, especially in the lists. At the very end, they actually had all champions available, and both players in the final pairing picked their five models for a 5-on-5. But coming up to that point, their rosters had almost no duplication in them. Like, they were very, very different rosters that each one of those players took up until that point. And I think that really says a lot. And for me, that means a lot, like being able to come into a game and be like, I'm going to play the models I think look cool, or I'm just going to base this around my playstyle and not be like, well, yeah, like the Warriors of Chaos look cool, but you're going to get stomped every time, you know, like to be able to do that is saying a lot. And it was a really cool part about the game. And yeah, 54 millimeter models were difficult to transport at times, but most of the time you were bringing 5 to 7 models and maybe a monster or two. So again, compared to other games, like, that's really not too bad. Like, that is easy enough to fit into a, you know, even a personal item on a plane. It's again just for people being like, this game is so cool, I need to bring everything, I can't just limit myself. And I think that says a lot. And I don't think I've ever demoed the game for somebody and they haven't wanted to play more of it. Like, I don't think I ever had an opportunity where someone came in and demoed it and were just like, yeah, I didn't have fun. Like, this just isn't for me.
You touched on a very good point then, about the draft mode. Like, there's a pick and ban element as well, right? So, Owen, I'm not sure if you're aware. So, essentially, at a tournament for 5v5, you bring 7 heroes. And there's 2 ways we can do it. Either we call veto, where your opponent will ban one of your models and you'll pick your warband of 5 from the remaining 6. The other one is immunity, where you can say, I'm choosing a hero that I'm definitely going to play with. And then they ban from the rest, stop you getting combinations. So that's an important part of the game. You almost never play the game, except when you're learning. You almost never play the game, definitely not competitively, without having some of that pick and ban element. And the one that Chris touched on briefly was, for championship events, what we've done is a draft mode, just like League of Legends, where all the heroes are out there and you alternate having turns picking and banning heroes.
That's awesome. I definitely looked at the game. To Chris's point, I think I blinked on the price point. I do have to give Gunmeister Games credit, though. I think you guys did a fantastic job at trying to manage that. If I'm remembering correctly, it was the end of 2019 or early pre-COVID 2020. I think you were starting to offer models for, it was about $40 a miniature to the U.S.
Yeah, did a big drop down. Yeah, we did.
Yeah. That was really impressive. And I know that, you know, folks in Australia will listen to this and say to themselves, oh, geez, Americans complaining about importing stuff being expensive. Oh, no. but I do think it might have slowed the adoption here. I do think the game was just different. I think people are used to seeing 28 millimeter miniatures that you'll spend $400 on and you'll have 90 of, and something just kind of broke people's brains and saying, well, no, you can buy 5 for less money, but they're a little bit bigger. It just didn't compute for some people, which is a bit odd.
Well, I mean, it's that classic, what was it, A&W, who came out with the, oh, we're going to have a better value burger. You know, we're going to release the third pounder at the same price as McDonald's quarter pounder. And people were upset because they thought a third was less than a quarter. Like, like, people just bad at math sometimes, you know, like this.
Well, I imagine one of the things people are probably most excited to hear about, given the time this will be recorded and released, is what are some differences between the initial version of Judgment and Judgment Eternal Champions. Now, Chris is the expert here, so I'll let him go into all this. He's also played Judgment Eternal Champions, so knows that side of the house a bit better than me. So, do you want to take this one away?
Sure. So, yeah, I kind of lucked out here where I got to play quite a bit of this, actually, both on Tabletop Simulator, right? No, Vassal. One of the two. Vassal, I think.
Vassal. Yeah.
Yes, Vassal is where the vast amount of games take place. And my first game was actually against Peter from Creature Caster, which was a lot of fun. I gotta say, as much as I, you know, I was concerned about the game changing, I loved version one so much that I had some real concerns about going to version two, especially with some of the changes. Like, I owned a lot of the version one releases. I'm pretty sure I had about 25 models or 26 models, or I should say have. I have all these big models, and, you know, hearing some of those things kind of worried me a bit, but I've thoroughly enjoyed version two with everything I've played, and I've gotten some of the models in my hand, which have been a pleasure to work with. So overall, the miniature scale has changed. Where you used to have 54 millimeter true scale, a lot of the models are now, I believe, on 40 millimeter bases. The miniature style is also something that's changed a little bit as well. The original Judgment, I think, has a lot of charm to it. It's a very different feel between certain models. You know, like, if you compare some of the old Judgment 1 models and you look at, like, okay, let's take Kogan and compare him to Thrommel or compare him to Sky, you might almost think that, you know, it's not even the same game. At times, there's just a wide variety of just, like, kind of artistic input. It seems, though, as though a lot of the miniature style has a more unified look to it with Eternal Champions, and people can check that out because all the images are up on the Kickstarter. But even though the models still kind of take place in different timelines, in different times, different places, they still have managed to capture kind of a unified feel, where even like Alendir, who is more of almost like a modern day elf, really does look like he belongs in that same game, with Thrommel, who is a very classic dwarf styled model, and even going up to the futuristic orc Forge Master, who's actually a new model for this edition. There's also varieties on materials used to make models. The majority of the old Judgment Model 1 were made just resin only. There was a couple of PVC models that came out, such as Jaeger, but the vast amount of the line was resin. Creature Caster is offering two different types, where they have PVC models, which are at a cheaper price point, and are single-piece models, so for the players who just want to get out and play games, they can pop open their box and go at it. And then they have the resin models, which have some additional cosmetic options on the sprue, which is pretty neat. Like, looking at Zonja, like, she comes with two different axe styles. Looking at Thrommel, he comes with two different hammer styles, which is pretty neat. And it costs a little bit more, it requires a little bit more assembly, but for the people who are looking for, you know, display models to paint, it's a pretty awesome way to do it. It really opens up that accessibility to different types of gamers who want to play the game. There was a move to Hex Grid, which, at the time it was announced, I was skeptical about. But after
there was some backlash, but yeah, I'll get to that later.
I was skeptical, you know, because there was so much very competitive style movement in Judgment One, like that, like, fraction of an inch one way or another, the free form movement really gave a lot of options, and parts of it really defined a lot of gameplay. When you look at the way that the hexes were done, especially in certain things like charges and the new ways that charges can work on a hex mat, which is not just a straight, oh, you go in a line. There's actually different patterns that make it feel a lot more organic, that add to a lot more options, which is pretty nifty. And not having to carry a bunch of measurement tools and being easily able to kind of count stuff out, it speeds up gameplay a lot. And it makes it, again, just more accessible, easier to play without necessarily reducing the amount of deepness to the gameplay. And I think one of the biggest changes is the price. The price for Judgment dropped dramatically to the point where even on the Kickstarter, like, I got on the Kickstarter because I'm like, even if I have most of these models in version one, like, the price is too good. Like, it is very reasonable for the amount of models that you're getting. Now, you know, you're getting roughly four models for close to what used to be the price of one, which is pretty nifty, and it's a little bit easier to get into. Wow, I forgot one of the biggest ones. Sorry. There's also some gameplay changes. Some things definitely changed. I was like, oh, yeah, no, all this stuff. But gameplay changes. Now you can still take any hero that you want to take, but there are bonuses if you are kind of building along different almost affiliations, because now there are six gods in the game, and the gods grant you certain powers, and you get additionals based on the models that you're taking. Most models fall into two different affiliations. Some fall into more. And then each god has just one exclusive avatar, where this is the person who represents this god, which is how I initially chose the first two gods I wanted to buy into. I'm like, I like this model, so this is what I'm going to rock. The other big difference is that things are no longer tied into static printed mats, which is interesting and should be also a money saver for players, because you get a kind of, I don't want to say a blank mat, you get a gridded mat with a more just a background, and then you have tiles to set up, and there's different ways that the terrain tiles get set up to represent different scenarios. So different scenarios will have your effigies placed in different places. They'll have monsters placed in different places, and the terrain will get placed in different places as well. And there's both tile templates of terrain as well as 3D terrain for gamers who want to play with more 3D stuff on the board, which is also really cool, because that wasn't really much of an option in the original version of Judgment. It was all, you know, what terrain is built in on the board. You know, like, this board's going to have a gator and some trees and a river and this and that. And this other one's going to have cobblestone and walls and, you know, a small forest. So it's very interesting that now you get one mat and you get your terrain, and you're pretty much set for anything that comes up in the future.
Awesome. Andrew, anything to add to Chris's comparisons there?
No, I think it's good. I can provide a bit of context around some of the decisions if you'd like as well. So
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, cool. So, no, I think Chris knocked it on the head. It was a really good explanation of everything. So essentially what happened with us, V1 was doing well. You know, basically my brother and I gunmeister games. There were a few other people involved early on, but at that point in time, it had just become the two of us. And so, you know, we were doing everything, kind of the manufacturing, the logistics, the distribution, and talking to all the different stores, doing this from Australia. And most of our players and stores were in the US or in the UK. So that was tough. It was very challenging. And like Chris touched on earlier, the gameplay is so good that it was evident that the price point and the things holding the game back were the fact that we were such a small shop trying to do everything. At this point in time, I'd met Peter from Creature Cast a couple of times at Adepticon. I was an admirer of their models. And we started talking about one of their models, us writing rules, one of their models in our game. So the first time that another manufacturer's model would be tournament legal in Judgment. And that kind of evolved, and we ended up becoming partners. The two companies partnered in Eternal Champions. Now, at that point, a couple of things that were challenging was the price point was challenging. There was, Chris mentioned it about our neoprene mats had the terrain fixed on them, because that was a very important part of the game design, but it made it expensive because you had to buy different mats to have variety. We wanted to solve that problem. Like any game that uses freeform movement, you know, we were very keen to make the game resilient to really high level competitive play, in keeping with its MOBA traditions as well. And we found that difficult with free form movement. And so all these things, we sat down with, what can we do? You know, how bold do we want to be with this? And as we started chatting to Creature Caster and thinking about it ourselves, our courage increased. In the end, we probably adopted everything we wanted to do that was on the table that we discussed. We made the switch to 32 mil. That was a big decision. You know, we had, by nature of being a small company and doing two Kickstarters, we had very loyal people who we were very indebted to, who had supported us early adopters, who had pushed our game, played it, and spent a lot of money getting all the models. Like Chris said, he had 26 models, $50 a pop, right? Like, it wasn't a small decision. The thing that made us decide in the end to do it was, one, we make the game far more accessible for people. It just opened up so many opportunities to put like 10 heroes and two monsters in a starter box that's like $100 US in the Kickstarter is insane, right, compared to where we came from. But the fact that we moved to hexes as well meant that we could, and you still can, and we still do, use the original models in on the hexes. That we made the hexes big enough. There's a little bit of overhang, but you can play a game with 54 mil models, and we've done it. And they are tournament legal, always will be tournament legal for Eternal Champions. So that kind of softened the blow a little bit. And, you know, it's obviously easier still to bring the smaller models, and it's because it's cheap, a lot cheaper. Like Chris is saying, people are still buying them. But, you know, we wanted to pay tribute to people who had supported us up to that point. So it was that. Introduction of Gods was interesting. You know, we talked about factions, but we really decided that was one thing we didn't want to, we decided not to bring in. But we kind of brought in the Gods flavor, which has really added a really nice element to the game. Because with the Gods, there's a big pool of, you know, at the moment, I think each God has, you know, in the teens, you know, a dozen or so heroes that are counted as champions to that God. And there's three things the God bring. There's a warband bonus. There's an effigy power, which is like a once in the use, once per game feat. And there's a special sacred artifact. Now, for the feat, for the effigy power and for the artifact, only champions can use them. But even non-champions benefit from the effigy power. So you are really the ability. And we run online leagues in Vassal all the time, and we've got tournaments. And it's very rare. It's probably 50-50. Players often go out and bring non-champions into their warband, because it adds what they want for their play style, and it doesn't detract too much or hinder them too much from winning, because we haven't made it hard factions. So it's actually quite cool. The guys have been a great addition to it. We feel that's added another flavor to the game, which has been great. The hexes are incredible. Like, I've got to say, I've played 25 years of freeform games. When we first did Judgment, we did it freeform. But, man, the move to hexes has been amazing. We've managed to do it in a way where there's enough flexibility in the movement, but it's ultimately 100% precise. You know, you can knock a model over and put it back to where it was. There's no room for error, or either accidental error or for, dare I say it, you know, cheating error in the game. it can't happen now, right? Like, we can play the most competitive game in the world, the two most competitive players, and it's very little just room to have arguments about it because it's so clean. So it's quite cool. I absolutely love the game in its current state. I'm excited to get it out there and get people. And we lost players. You know, we lost people who were quite angry at us for moving to hexes. It ultimately, to me, it was the correct decision. I think time will show that it was for us, for the game, that Judgment is and what it's going to become.
Nice. I feel like anytime a miniatures game that was previously considered a tabletop war game moves to hexes, there's always the discussion about, is this now a board game or is this still something more like a war game? And it sounds like, from everything I'm hearing, this is definitely still the same flavor and fun that you had in the original version of Judgment, maybe just a little bit fewer opportunities for argument at the table. Excuse me.
100%. And, like, there's games out there like, you know, X-Wing or, you know, Marvel Crisis Protocol, where they've introduced really strict template-type movement. So it's still free-form, but, you know, you use widgets that are compulsory. You don't need to take measure and all this kind of stuff. We've taken one step further, but absolutely, it's still, you're still playing a tabletop war game.
I was going to say, I think it makes the gameplay flow a little bit better. There's a little bit, because you take away the micro measurement, you know, it's not a, you know, and you don't have to worry about some of the craziness of before, of like, okay, like, let me move 3 inches, put down my proxy base, then let me check where my charge lanes are from this move place. Do I have, okay, here's my charge lane plus my, you know, my melee threat. And, like, very similar, you're not, like, measuring out, like, oh, can I make a parting blow here? Like, are you within 2 inches of this model, 3 inches of that model, 1 inch of this model? There's, you know, there's a lot less measurement, and you can readily access the game state just by looking at the table. I think that's really where the benefit is that it's bringing the focus to the gameplay itself, not on measurement and Uber-type gameplay.
Nice. I mean, it sounds like this is a great step forward. I guess on that note, is there anything from the first version that didn't make it into the new edition that you think you'll miss or people might miss?
Yeah, we did have one thing with that is not available. We had fairly advanced map. Scorched Earth map came out, and that had a teleportation gate. That was really fun and opened up the map a lot. And we don't currently have that in the current game, because in the current game, we're producing 3D terrain for everything. So you'll be able to have everything three-dimensional. And we are waiting. It will come into version 2, but it's not here at the moment. So that's the one thing. Not all the heroes are currently available. That's the biggest thing that burns me is that we weren't able to get anything, but they all are all coming and all going well. The Kickstarter is shipping now as we speak, so we're hoping within 12 months we'll be back to having all the heroes out. And of course, we've added a bunch of new ones already. The demons are all new from the existing creature cast and range. Lugdrug was a forge guard that was existing creature cast. So we've actually have added new heroes, but not all the old ones and all the old favorites are available yet. So that's something we definitely are going to introduce as well. Which is going to be cool when we get there.
Yeah, introducing the demons is definitely a new thing that happened.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry, Chris, one thing people asked about, we don't have factions, but how do we have races? We do have races, and they do have differences of those stereotypes, and the demons have their, you know, a couple of special rules, coalesce and this kind of thing, but we haven't made it ridiculously different, right? So, and they're not hard and fast. They're kind of like, you know, undead have some special rules that make them a little bit unique. But yeah, but demons was a race we introduced, Chris, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Demons were brand new. Seems like there's a lot more undead than there used to be, which is interesting. It's definitely definitely increased the play a little bit. What I'm really curious about is when Zaffin, the model, gets released, is he still going to have his boat or did he leave it in first edition?
Yeah, I think there is a remnants of a boat. He's still a pirate. I don't know how. I haven't seen the final sculpt. Most of that's been done, but I do recall there was, like, the cannon is still on his base and he's still got some the mast and stuff. I'm not sure whether the actual half the boat hull is still there, but I mean, we had a lot of fun with the version 1 minis with that kind of thing. You know, we just went to town. It was, you know, if you play League of Legends, you know, and you have someone wielding a gun versus someone with a knife and it works. And, you know, we wanted to capture the same thing. I think we did that pretty well as well.
So speaking of models, Andrew, do you have a favorite model from version 1?
Yeah, it's interesting. I get asked all the time. There's a couple of big favorites for me. Haxar was definitely one because we pushed the envelope with that, and I want to tip my hat off to some of the sculptors we worked with, like Tom Lishman. So he was amazing, and he did Haxar, and he was always very open to us trying to push the boundaries of, and that's the balancing the model on the pole kind of thing. So he's a big favorite. I really love Zyvira, the V1 Zyvira, very characterful model. I'm just looking in my cabinet because I saw this was coming up. I did like Piper was another one where we pushed the envelope with having the illusion of the model on the model as well. So it's like two models on the one base. So yeah, they're probably and one more. Sorry, Cruel. If I had to pick one that I think just character, background, gameplay, I think Cruel, he's one of my favorites, yeah, for sure.
Nice. What about you, Owen?
Haxa, all the way. That miniature is magic. I don't know what kind of mad lad would ever decide to sculpt the miniature that way, but you did it. It looks awesome. From everyone I've talked to, it actually holds up well. It doesn't fall over all the time. So hats off to you. It's a beautiful model, and just from an engineering standpoint, it is out of this world.
Yeah, thank you. And he was inspired by Rafiki in The Lion King, you know, the and he holds his pole and he jumps around and he's very agile. And that was where I got my inspiration from. And I thought, but Tom Lishman, the sculptor, 100% hats off to him for engineering the sculpt so it worked.
How about you, Chris?
So this is actually a tough question, and not necessarily because there's so many awesome models and stuff like that, but it's going to be kind of a two-parter here because what would have been my favorite model if it got released is before the transition from 1 to 2, Andrew and I had actually been in works to add a character to the game based on myself.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
So wow. I do actually have, like, sketches that I drew on a napkin. It's like, this is what I'm thinking, right? Like, this will be awesome. And it's definitely not what you would hand to a sculptor because it's just crazy notes and stuff. But it was going to be, like, a post-apocalyptic orc brewmaster, which was, like, a support model. And I was super stoked for it. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be the coolest thing ever. And I think that might actually be the hardest part of this. Even though version 2 looks incredible, like missing out on that, I think might be the hardest part of
I
switching.
forgot about that. You mentioned it. I've got rules for that. I wrote some rules for that, I remember. Yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
Yeah. We had some basic rules coming up. We're
Yeah.
like talking about play testing. I was like, all right, this is gonna be awesome. But had to go into a model that was actually released, Kogan. And the reason for that is pretty simple. I absolutely love Big Trouble in Little China, and Kogan is basically Jack Burton if he was a Minotaur. Like, he's got the ripped jeans, the tank top. I went all out. I painted the rising sun on my tank top. He has those like bright denim, like 80s jeans on, like. And even though the model like didn't fit my playstyle at all, he found his way to the tabletop a lot. I really just dug the way that it looked. And I like when there's those like subtle nods to other franchises. You know, there was a couple in the game where it's like, yeah, like Sky the Elf was clearly Keanu Reeves from The Matrix if he was an elf. And like things like that were pretty cool because you see it and it's just like, I love this movie, and then you want to play this game that has nothing at all to do with the movie, but it's a fun little bit there. So
The
yeah.
journey of creating those V1 range was quite amazing. It was so much fun.
So on the note of sculpted drunk Chris as a model, was there anything else that you had planned for the first version that didn't quite make it to the second edition?
No, not that I don't want to be a big spoiler, but we were looking at a 9v9
Oh.
on a 4 foot map, and we've got rules for this, and it might happen in the future where you basically introduce big models. So there's a concept of 9 hero slots, and you can either take 9 individual models or you could take a big one that was 2 or 3 slots, and we had rules for that. We play tested a couple of times, and that's something what we might look at in the future. But yeah, we've got a few things to do before we want to do that. But that's something that evolved. I love that we played it, play tested, and it's so much fun. And we can start introducing some of the demon princes and stuff that creature caster have in their range, but we'll look at that in the future.
Nice.
Awesome.
All right. So I feel like we hit on a lot of the fun judgment stuff. Moving along, we always ask our guests who are on some questions about dead war games. So for us, a dead war game is a game that is no longer receiving support from the manufacturer. So we know a lot of players sometimes are like, oh man, I really like, like Necromunda, but nobody plays it at my store, so therefore it's dead. That's not what we mean. So if it's currently being produced, it's not, that wouldn't be dead. But with that being said, what would be your favorite dead miniatures war game if you have one?
Is War Master? That's no longer produced, isn't it?
No, nope. That very dead.
Yeah, okay. So I think I dabbled with War Master. That was quite a fun game in its time, and I think it had legs, but I don't know why it just didn't take. But yeah, that smaller scale that you have grander armies, and anyway, probably War Master.
Along the same line, is there any Dead War game you wish people knew more about?
No, I don't. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. No, I can't think of any. I'm hoping you guys have some examples for me.
I mean, considering that you're like, I think the tough part is Australia. You guys, like, I know GW makes it there. I know War Machine makes it there, but I think some of these like smaller producers might not have popped in. Things like Confrontation, Dark Age.
Yeah, I remember those. They were around. I do remember. I remember Confrontation had some pretty cool models. Remember that?
Yeah, Confrontation definitely has some, probably still some of the greatest werewolves that were ever made.
I remember. That's correct. That's true. Yeah.
So, while we have you on, is there anyone you'd like to give a shout out to?
I don't know. I guess maybe just Peter from Creature Caster. It's very big. When I approached him and laid it out and said, "Hey, this is. I'm open to this. You wanted to talk about it." It was a big thing. They were a miniature company that was looking at trying to get some rules and get a game, and we were a bit of both. But I think we saw ourselves more as the rules writers, and it was a big leap of faith from him and us. But I think he's been great to work with. It was a big shift for his company. It's been difficult with COVID and problems with shipping, and the Kickstarter's been delayed. But we've stuck thick together. There hasn't been any issues between us. The way that's worked, a very strong relationship. So yeah, I think shout out to him and Simon, the guys, and all the Creature Caster crew. been a good move for us, and I think the future's extremely bright for the game now.
It's great that you mentioned it. I completely agree with everything you said, but as you said, I realized, oh man, I didn't even tell Peter we were doing this.
Oh, I told him. Okay.
I knew I forgot something important, but...
yeah, no, I mentioned it to him. I was on this morning. He was quite excited about it.
Yeah, Peter's great. I have had the chance to interact with Peter and Simon and Taylor and all them a lot, you know, over the course of the past year, starting out at Adepticon, and, you know, they're just building that stereotype even more that I love all Canadians. So,
so I guess one last question on that note for Andrew. If folks wanted to pick up Judgment Eternal Champions and didn't back the Kickstarter, do you have any rough ideas on when that might start hitting the store shelves?
Yeah, so it does depend on region at the moment. So there's going to be different stores for the three major regions, which would be the EU, North America, and Australia. Australia is shipping, the Kickstarter will ship this week. So we'll probably give it a week or two, but then the online store will be open for Australian purchases like pretty much in a couple of weeks. I know the UK shipping has hit. It's in going through customs as we speak. So I think across all the regions, I think by the end of February, I'm pretty sure everything will be shipped. And once we're just holding off, we're not going to sell retail until the Kickstarter backers have their stuff. But I'd say we're looking at maybe 6 weeks from now, you have all the Wave 1 stuff, which is the starter box, the 5v5 map, the God Dice. They'll all be available on the store for purchase by the end of February.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't think it would be that fast. This is unusual for a Kickstarter. You guys actually seem to have your stuff together.
Yeah, I think once we get it, I mean, there's been a delay getting it because of all the stuff going on in the world. But yeah, we'll be selling the stuff at Adepticon. You'll be able to pick it up.
Awesome. Well, speaking of conventions, there's some Dead Game Wargaming events coming up. Captain Con is coming up in a few weeks. That's the weekend of February 3rd through the 5th. You can come get demos of Judgment Eternal Champions. You can also play in a Dark Age event or an Enid event. And Adepticon, will you be at Adepticon, Andrew?
Yeah, my brother Jeff and I are both going. We're booked. We're there for that. So,
awesome.
Yeah, really excited. First time I've been there. I went to like three or four in a row or whatever and then haven't been since COVID and stuff. But I'm super excited. We both will be there.
Nice. So I'll ask the cliche American question. Do you like the pizza there or do you think that's an abomination unto God?
Yeah, I went. I had a deep dish pizza in Chicago, and no, it wasn't to my liking. Yep, so I prefer our thinner, more flavors and pizzas over here. I think
you're all right by me.
Okay, that's good.
So no, I hope listeners will, if they are also going to Adepticon, check out the Judgment events. Check out the is it a Gunmeister Games or Creature Caster booth that'll be at?
Creature Caster booth. We're all Creature Caster these days. So we'll be there doing demos in the booth. There's a Thursday 3v3 event. There's a Saturday 5v5 event. In between, we'll be running demos. You can challenge Jeff or I. We're going to be doing a whole bunch of fun stuff. So Judgment's there. Yeah, we'll be there. Our sole job is to play games with people.
Ooh, it's hard work, but somebody has to do it.
That's right.
Speaking of Adepticon, there's also some other Dead Game events. You got Confrontation Story events on Friday and a tournament on Saturday, Dark Age Saturday evening, a Dusk 1947 Friday event, as well as some Warhammer Fantasy Battle, Mercs, Mordheim, all sorts of good stuff. You can check out the website. If you listen to this podcast, you know where it is. I'm not going to overexplain it. With that, I think we'd like to, again, just thank Andrew for being here. Thank you so much for being our first international guest.
I really appreciate it. It's been amazing. Good honor. Yeah, it's really cool. I can't wait to catch up. So you guys will both be at Adepticon?
Yep. I'll be there with Muse on Minis like usual.
I unfortunately will not be. I have to be at a powder handling conference. So for work, not for fun. Don't worry, I'm not Walter White. But unfortunately, I do have to miss that this year.
Okay, well, that's a shame, but I'll catch up with you, Chris, for sure.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely have to get some games in because I will 100% have models.
Yeah, I'm pumped. And anyone who's listening, please come and say hello. We'll love to meet you. And if you don't know anything about the game, I can introduce you for sure.
I feel that this is also a good part to mention. Not only, you know, we always talk about our Discord come because it's fun conversations. Most of it now seems to have migrated to everybody making fun of me. I'm not sure how that happened, but there's also a fantastic Judgment Discord as well. And I definitely suggest checking that out, especially for people who want to check out the game before they buy. There are often people willing to kind of walk people through, which is really cool. And because it's on a hex, using Vassal is, honestly, it's one of the few games I will actually play on Vassal.
Yeah, it's quite easy on Vassal, isn't it?
Because it actually makes sense. You know, you don't have to like bust out fake measuring tools and stuff.
Yeah.
So I highly, highly suggest the Judgment Discord, and also that you can download the app and check out some of these cards. Check out, and I, you know, if you're a very rules heavy person, you know, check it out. Everything is out there and available. You don't have to spend to see what you want, and you know, you get to go in with all the knowledge you feel like gaining.
Yeah, and the apps are called Warband Commander on both the iOS and Android app stores. Warband Commander is the app's name, but Judgment is the name of the Discord.
Awesome. Well, on that note, I'm Owen.
I'm Chris.
I'm Andrew.
There we go. I knew it. Thanks for coming out, guys.
Cheers, everyone. Peace.
Intro music is Axe to Mouth by Pulp 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.